there, everybody. You are listening to This Show Is So Gay. I'm your host, Ken Schneck. This is episode number 385. As always, you can get in touch with us by dropping us a line, send an email on over to ken@thisshowissogay.com, stroll on over to thisshowissogay.com to learn all about the fun things happening with our little gay radio show that could. You can follow us on Twitter. The handle is This Show Is So Gay. And of course, go on over to that Facebook, type in This Show Is So Gay, like us, because we sure as heck like you. We have an incredible show for you this week with not one, but two guests. Let me introduce the first one to you. Margaret Cho is an award-winning comedian, actress, activist, writer, changemaker. Heck, she even just added composer to the list. Her stand-up is legendary. Her sitcom, All American Girl, was groundbreaking. And as the patron saint for outsiders, her efforts to empower women and the LGBTQ community and communities of color and so many others have made a real and true difference in this world. I could read off her accolades for hours, but then we wouldn't actually have time to speak, so I will just say, Margaret Cho, welcome to This Show Is So Gay.
Oh, thank you very much. That's awesome.
Margaret, let's just start off by establishing some boundaries. What level of gushing can I do without making you uncomfortable?
Oh, gosh. I don't know. I'm just really grateful. Thank you so much. That's awesome.
I would imagine in any number of contexts in your daily life, people are just randomly approaching you. I would assume there have to be some contexts where we should leave Margaret Cho alone.
Oh, I don't feel like there needs to be. I'm just really glad that people are happy that I'm doing what I'm doing, and I'm always really grateful for that. And, you know, I'm a fan as well, and I think, like, I have no boundaries. Like, I'll go up to people, whatever, you know, that I like. And usually people are very receptive, and so I'm always receptive for anybody who wants to say hi.
All right. Well, we have so much ground to cover, Margaret. Are you ready?
Yes.
Well, I love that on your website we highlight that Margaret Cho began writing jokes at 14 years old. What kind of jokes was 14-year-old Margaret Cho writing?
Well, I remember at that time there was a lot of, like, in comedy clubs you would go, and there was a lot of, I was in San Francisco, and there were a lot of comedians doing jokes about Asian drivers.
Okay.
So my very first joke was, my name is Margaret Cho, and I drive very well. And then I would just sort of, like, take it from there. You know, I was in sort of an adversarial position because almost all of the comedians that I encountered were straight white men. So I was trying to do something that, you know, you didn't see a lot of younger Asian girls anywhere around there. So I was trying to represent myself, my point of view, lots of things.
Nice. And when you set out, what was the big goal? In your mind, where did you see yourself?
I don't know. You know, I didn't really have many sort of plans, per se. I just wanted to do comedy, and I thought just getting out and getting up there really was enough. And to some degree, it still is. You know, I really go for it every day. I try to be the best comedian that I can. It's the thing that has a journey that's carried me into adulthood. I'm very proud of my career. I work at it really, really strenuously on a daily basis.
Did you have a sense that that little 12-year-old white gay Jewish me would be in my kitchen in northern New Jersey doing bits for my mom that were really culturally dissonant?
I love that, but I think that's really great. I love it.
My mother didn't understand half of what I was doing. She kept saying, we don't own a bookstore, but I said, you don't get it. Margaret's family did.
How fabulous.
In preparing for this, you know, it's a little difficult for me to prepare for this because I'm so well-versed in your career, and I decided to go back a little bit and watch a clip of you that I had never seen before. So I went back quite a few years and watched Margaret Cho on an episode of The Golden Palace.
Oh, yeah, that was great. That was so long ago, but it's also kind of coming up because I just spent New Year's with Jim Valley, who was one of the producers of Golden Palace and Golden Girls. Basically, Golden Palace was Golden Girls. It was just that B had left, changed the show, you know, to make it work without her. And was basically Golden Girls, but without me.
Do you remember your character was an acupuncturist and you were cooking butterfly shrimp?
I still remember the lines. I was so nervous.
I was looking in an interview. You did an interview, I can't believe it's been 7 years ago already. You were talking about an episode of Drop Dead Diva, which, Margaret, I it's one of my favorites out there. What an amazing show.
Oh, I love it, yes.
And you said this, and gosh, it's like you could have said this last week, but this was 7 years ago. This is what you said. You said, quote, "We're kind of coming up around the issues of what is American. Does American actually always mean white? I think it's a great conversation to have." Margaret, why haven't we made more progress in 7 years, or have we?
I don't know. I feel like we've gone backwards, especially with our president-elect, who ran on this platform of racism and xenophobia. And I think it's a really scary thing. I didn't realize we could go backwards, and I believe that we have. I'm really concerned about what's going to happen and what we will be looking at in 4 years' time. We'll have to see.
Yeah. You know, look, I'm a college professor. My area of academia is how we talk about race. And so part of what my students and certainly their professor, what I'm always concerned about is what do we do with that concern? And I know one of my favorite lines that you always raise is when communities urge you, you know, Margaret, do something. Where do we start out to take this concern and turn it into some sort of action?
I think it's about talking about it. You know, for me, it's pretty much about writing about this issue and trying to make my comedy really about all of this stuff. And, you know, wherever we are in our lives, we have to use what we do in a way to sort of try to find some answers for ourselves. It's very strange. And I don't really know what's going to happen, but I do know that there's a lot of people that feel the same way that I do.
Yeah.
And we've got to figure out how we're going to get through this new administration.
Right. So I would imagine that's a little bit of a tricky balance for you because you're on stage and you're entertaining, obviously, but we're also talking about, and not that you've ever shied away from anything serious, but how do you strike that balance between, all right, obviously I'm trying to entertain, but there are important things to be said here.
Well, you know, it has to be funny and it has to be really about entertainment, but at the same time, you can make your points or make your point of view very clear with that. That's the artistry of stand-up comedy is, you know, we can say what we need to say, but also be funny.
Yeah. Yeah. You know, you had some great quotes in the past couple of weeks about Carrie Fisher. Talk to our listening audience about Carrie Fisher and what her presence meant to you.
Oh, she was awesome. She was an incredible force for people who were different. You know, there was, like, of course, the heroic Princess Leia, but also there was her incredible comedic writing, her one-woman shows. There was just so much to her that she put out there, you know, for people who were suffering from depression and, you know, like she just put this idea of mental health out there as being something we could talk about. And being neurotic was kind of cool because of her. So I really admired her. I can't believe she's gone.
Yeah.
It's really strange. She was much too young.
Yeah.
You know, I don't know. It's pretty tragic.
Yeah, I think you've done so well to highlight so much of the great work that she's done. You know, it is award season, Margaret Cho, and you do such great work there on Fashion Police. What's one trend that Margaret Cho is pretty done with? What's one fashion trend that you're like, okay, I think we're good on that?
I'm really sick of lace. I know that's weird, but I've had it with lace. I just think that there's more, you know, that there's more to fashion than that. And I'd like to see more risks being taken. I feel like there's certain people that will always stand out to me. Janelle Monáe is one. She's always fabulous on the red carpet. I think she's really special. I actually think Kristen Stewart is great, too.
Yeah.
There's an opportunity for a lot of actresses and, you know, young, like, women, famous people, like, all of these different kinds of women that we see on the red carpet. I think guys, too, I'd like to see more of an effort put in by men. You know, like, I just think it's, men on the red carpet, it's so boring. You know, I want
right.
to see dudes taking risks and doing different stuff with fashion. To me, that would be really exciting.
And yet, oddly, I just heard you urging men to wear more lace, so I might have gotten that wrong.
Men could wear lace. It's got to be the right cut.
Okay.
There would be so, I don't know, Prince did it absolutely beautifully.
Oh, yeah.
So I think he wore lace like nobody else. So I would encourage that for guys.
I love it. Well, speaking of award season, I don't know if you know this, Margaret Cho, but you were nominated for your fifth career Grammy nomination in the Best Comedy Album. Tell our listening audience all about American Myth.
Oh, this is great. This is a move towards musical comedy that I've been doing. In addition to my regular comedy career, I also make musical comedy albums. This is the second one. I'm really proud of it. I composed a lot of this, also with help from Garrison Starr. I love this record. It pays tribute to Anna Nicole Smith and prostitutes I have known and lots of other kinds of creatures, gay male babysitters that I had growing up, the very special relationship between old gay men and little girls, which I think is very pure and perfect. So, I mean, it's an album that's really special to me, and I'm really grateful to have made it and also to be nominated again for this.
Talk to me about the response that you've received from fans. I have seen it just all over the internet. People are glowing about this album.
Yeah, people really love it, and I'm just so grateful. Like, I love doing comedy. Making music is really special. I think I would say, like, I try to approach music in the same way that I do my comedy, and I try to make a lot of the same kinds of points. I do perform some songs in my stand-up act, but I really treasure this album.
Oh, that's so wonderful. I mean, I have to ask, do you already have your Grammy outfit picked out?
I have, a number of things, because I'm also hosting the pre-televised awards, which is lots and lots of awards being given out. During the telecast, you only see 8 awards given out, but there are so many to give out. So I'll be on hand to do that, presenting the award to lots of incredible, deserving people. And so I have a lot of duties that day, because I'll be walking the red carpet, also on behalf of Fashion Police. Brad Goreski will be styling me for the day.
Nice.
So we've got a couple of tricks up our sleeve.
I love it. Who's out there on the comedy scene that we don't know about that we should know about, Margaret? Tell us about some of the folks that we should be paying some attention to.
I love my fellow nominee, Tig Notaro.
Yes.
I think she's absolutely incredible. A great comedian, also a good friend, but somebody that just does things differently. She thinks differently, and she's really, really special. I also love Brent Weinbach. I think he's really original. I love Theo Vaughn. Scott Silverman is the godfather of gay comedy, and he's really, really important, too. So is Scott Thompson from Kids in the Hall. So
yeah.
There's a lot of people that I am really in awe of in my career.
So great. Well, what's coming up for you that you are excited about?
I'm definitely excited about award season with Fashion Police. We are so ready to go, which is really, really exciting. It's going to be a good award season. I'm really excited about doing comedy. I'll be out there on the road a little bit, and for sure, like starting next fall, I'll be doing a pretty major next tour, which is great. And I'm always busy. So I'm doing a movie right now with Will Smith called Bright, which I can't really talk too much about, but it's really exciting.
We'll take it.
So I love what I'm doing.
Well, look, we'll end with a little learning annex with Margaret Cho. You said earlier in the interview just how hard you work at your craft. And we have any number of listeners who write in every week. You know, we've been doing this show for 8 years, and people write in and say, I want to do that, but I don't know where to start. Where would you tell our listeners to start to get those ideas from their head out there into the world?
Well, you do it a little bit every day. I mean, that's the thing, is that I wanted to do comedy, and I was a kid, and I didn't know what I was doing, but I worked at it a little bit every day, and eventually you get there. You know, it's just the journey begins with one step. Love a Million Miles begins with one step. It takes you all over the world. You can do it. It's just about devoting a little bit of time every day to what you really want to do.
There it is. There it is. Listeners, we need you guys to stroll on over right this very second to margaretcho.com. So many links on there. If you are not following Margaret on Twitter, you are making a horrible mistake, and your day is missing out on things that you don't even know about. So you need to follow her there. I will tell you this, Margaret. I don't really have another way to say this, so I will just say you are my hero. You are, of course, ridiculously entertaining, but you're so fearless, and you're vulnerable, and you're honest, and you're change-oriented, and it would be easy for me to do the whole, oh, I was in a dark time and Margaret Cho pulled me out, which, by the way, not a lie, but I can also say that you made the great times even better, and that's as much of a gift as being, you know, our collective medication to depression. You are my hero, Margaret.
Oh, thank you so much. I'm so honored. That's great.
Please keep doing what you're doing, and just have a blast this whole award season, Margaret.
Thank you.
She wakes up in the morning, the pain in her jet black hair. Decaf coffee in her hand and a Marlboro Red. She drives down to the office in a Japanese car with a radio blasting. She dreams of taking it to a bar. Today she'll pay the bills. She won't think about the thrills. The gasoline.
All right, folks, and we are back with our second amazing guest on this week's episode. Let me introduce him to you. Ryan J. is one of America's most popular nationally syndicated radio film critics. He can be heard live Friday mornings on FM stations across the country, in addition to recorded weekly movie review segments for premier networks. He is also featured weekly as resident film critic on The Morning Blend and weekend newscasts on the NBC TV affiliate in Milwaukee. Ryan is a member of the Broadcast Film Critics Association, which annually awards excellence in film at the Critics' Choice Movie Awards. He's often on the red carpets. He's interviewing everybody. And Ryan is also an Oz historian, interviewing the casts and filmmakers of many Wizard of Oz affiliated films, which we will talk all about right this very second. He is here with us. Ryan J., welcome back to This Show Is So Gay.
Ken, I'm so glad to be joining you once again. How have you been?
I have been really great. I was going to add to your bio, and the snappiest dresser I know, but I didn't want to objectify you in that way.
Well, you know, that hasn't always been the case, and thank you for saying that, if that's your true opinion, because I am fashion police in Us Weekly magazine for about 11 years now. And once I started doing television about 5 years ago, after doing, you know, I'm still doing radio for going on 11 years now, 12, I started running into people at the mall criticizing what I was wearing. So it was kind of like, wow, how the tables turn, you know, at least locally where I'm on TV. And so I had to learn how to up my game, at least try to, a little bit for the TV viewing audience. So I appreciate if you've noticed or appreciate it too.
How many blazers would you say that you own?
The better question is, how many ties do I own, and why did I just go and buy five more at Express last night? Yeah, I mean, I could be close to 200 ties at this point, and I honestly wear them maybe once or twice a year, and then, you know, I'll just kind of rotate, and it's trying to keep things fresh, and, you know, I feel like, you get a little bit of a budget for some clothes, and you could either spend it all on some great name brands, or you could just spend it on, you know, lesser expensive things, but get more variety. So I kind of go that route, and I'm a fan of H&M and Express and that kind of stuff.
I feel that the women over there on the NBC TV affiliate in Milwaukee, they very much enjoy your wardrobe.
Oh, thank you. Yeah, I guess so. We're friends too, so they know. And I also like a good theme. So when I'm promoting something Wizard of Oz, I'm in green. Or if it's Valentine's Day, I like to wear some pink or red. And hopefully it's not too cheesy. You know, I feel like I'm just approaching that point where I'm going to have to stop doing that because maybe I'm just too old.
I like when you get them gifts. Sometimes I want you to bring me a gift on the air.
Oh, well, if I were to bring you a gift, it would probably be a package of movies that I'd want you to see.
And, love it.
You know, maybe some disturbing drama that would inspire you to call me and be like, why'd you get that for me?
Well, we'll go there. We'll go there. Well, let me just ask you generally, are movies better this time of year, Ryan? Are the movies that are out in theaters because it's award season, it feels like the quality is always a little bit better. Is that actually true?
It's very strategic. There really are movie seasons. Movie seasons used to be more pronounced. Decades ago, there was, you know, blockbuster movie season and then award season, you know, November, December, January. A lot of movies will open, not a lot, but a lot of the awards darling films will play like one date in New York or LA in late December just to be awards eligible and then roll out into national distribution in January or February. But as far as award season goes, it's a very astute question because I think a lot of the studios will put out their award-worthy films towards the end of the year because that's when the awards shows are, you know, getting ready to nominate and vote and marketing. The studios are putting all their marketing dollars there, so they're fresher in the voters' minds. So I vote for the Critics' Choice Awards, and also I recently joined the Gay and Lesbian Entertainment Critics Association, which
nice.
Does the Dorian Awards. So, and we get to have a little bit more fun with those categories because we do like Best Campy Movie and stuff like that. But yeah, I think studios certainly are more aware. But movie season has kind of watered down a little bit in the last 5 to 10 years, where we're seeing some movies that will be out in like January or February, even March, which is usually like no man's land for movies, where they kind of, the studios will dump off their movies that weren't award worthy at the beginning part of the year, but they'll sometimes creep up for awards consideration. So you never know.
By the way, one movie that's on Netflix that's nominated for a ton of awards, we saw Sing Street last week. I love that one.
Oh, so good. Yeah. I mean, and that's what's so great about, like, you know, the Golden Globes, like they'll have a, you know, the musical or comedy category. So that Sing Street is actually nominated for the Best Picture, Musical or Comedy there, but I doubt it will get any awards attention for the Oscars. But you never know. I mean, it should. It is a darling of a film.
All right. Well, let's talk about the big ones out there right now. Certainly one of the biggest LGBTQ-related films of the year, Moonlight. What did we think of Moonlight?
You know, I saw Moonlight a little bit before the advance buzz for it, and it's interesting how I feel like politically what happened in Hollywood with Moonlight is that was sort of this year's answer to last year's hashtag Oscars so white.
Mm-hmm.
And we all thought that it was going to be the birth of a nation, which was, you know, the big African-American slavery, you know, film of the year. And it really is an amazing movie that everyone should be seeing and deserves nominations in every category and probably deserves to win in many categories. I would have voted for it, but didn't get nominated for anything because of the scandal with the writer, director, star, who,
yeah.
Have you followed that story?
Oh, yeah.
So I think that, you know, Moonlight, you know, there's always one indie movie that breaks through. There are a few that broke through this year for awards, but certainly Moonlight is getting a lot of attention. I liked it very much. Have you seen it?
I have seen it, yes.
Okay. You know, it takes place, there's three chapters in it, and it's kind of three stages of this man's life, and it's a great story, you know, a different community, a different coming out story and the way that a man deals with that. But I like the first two chapters better than the third. The third one kind of slowed down for me, so I was kind of in the minority that I didn't think the film was perfect all the way through. A lot of people disagree with me, but I think it's a very powerful film and beautiful.
And we should remind everyone, what are the three categories of movies that we should know that we quiz you on? What should we do with movies?
See it, rent it, or skip it, my rating system.
And for Moonlight, what should we do?
See it.
All right, there we go. A couple nights ago, just saw La La Land. What's your take on La La Land?
I love La La Land. I saw it 3 times, even before release. I'm a huge musical movie fan, so I wish we were seeing more than one big movie musical released throughout the year. But if we're lucky, we get one, and this is it this year. I don't know why it's broken through the way that it has in comparison to movies like Moulin Rouge that I thought should have won Best Picture. At least that was nominated when that movie came out, you know, back in like 2001 or something. But La La Land really seems to be appealing to even the dudes who go and shout at football games. You know, it's kind of pleasing every audience, not just the theater queens like me. So I love that it should be the first musical to win Best Picture at the Oscars since Chicago, right? I'm thankful for that. I loved it. I thought it was fun. Did you see that one too?
I thought it was magical.
Yeah. I mean, it's romantic and it's colorful and it certainly sweeps you up into the romance of Hollywood and that great chemistry between Emma Stone and Ryan Gosling. And let's not forget, Ryan Gosling, you know, was with JT and Christina Aguilera and the Mickey Mouse Club back in the day. So here we're finally getting to see him sing and dance, and he learned his own piano for the film, directed by Damien Chazelle, who did Whiplash so brilliantly. We saw how he works with music and drama and action, and he brought that sensibility to an actual musical this time. And I think people are just universally enjoying it. Maybe it's a little overhyped for the people that are finally catching on and seeing it now and not getting it, because there is a little bit of a stillness in the middle of the picture. But I love La La Land. I think it deserves all the accolades it's getting.
I felt that there was a place for me in the relationship between Ryan Gosling and Emma Stone. I don't know that they were aware of me, but I felt there was a place for me there.
And would that be in the middle?
That's not the point. The point is that I was invested. No, I was so invested. I just thought, and by the way, quite a bit of LGBTQ backlash online of the gay, many of the gays not enjoying La La Land. And I will just here say they are wrong.
I agree. Why be a hater? I mean, what's the alternative, people? Do you not want to have a big musical being celebrated for the awards season and getting all the national attention this one's getting? I mean, I think, it'd be great to be getting 10 big musicals a year, but so I'm kind of a cheerleader when it comes to seeing the minority of what I like to see in Hollywood. But yeah, I don't understand the backlash. The music is great. I think the songs are catchy. I've been listening to the soundtrack and when I drive, and it just, you know, it's about love. So haters back off, right?
Good stuff. Good stuff. So saw La La Land 2 nights ago. Then last night we tried to go see Hidden Figures, but the people in front of us in line bought the last 2 tickets. And so for the second time in 24 hours, I saw La La Land again. But what would I have seen? What would I have seen with Hidden Figures?
Hidden Figures is a beautiful movie, and it's inspiring, and it's rousing. It's based on a true story, and what I love about it is it has the same kind of impact as like a great sports film, where even if you're not a sports fan, you can be roused, and you're cheering, and you're emotional by the end. And I love the performances in Hidden Figures, and it's an important story, but it also just moves. It's kind of like what Whiplash did, where it was a story about, you know, a drama between a music student and teacher, but felt like an action film. There are moments in Hidden Figures for a great true story drama that it is, but it feels like an action movie just because of how intense the drama is, because of how good the performances are. And so you have to go back to the theater and try to see it again because you'll love it.
Okay, we're going to go back and see that. What should we not see? What should I not spend my $11.25 on these days?
Well, you know what is going to kind of sweep award season is Viola Davis for Fences in the supporting actress category. And that's really ridiculous because she's the leading actress in that film. It's so strategic of Harvey Weinstein and the Weinstein Company by, you know, putting her up in the supporting actress category. It's kind of not fair to Nicole Kidman and Lion, who really deserves the award in that category this year. But Fences is a great film, but it's certainly one you could watch at home. So I wouldn't say you have to see it in the theater. Save your money there. Wait to rent it someday and catch that one at home.
Okay. Yeah, I read a tweet the other day that said Viola Davis is as much of a supporting actress as Jennifer Hudson was in Dreamgirls.
Exactly.
That feels about right. That feels about right. Mm-hmm. What about songs? Any songs that are catching your ear these days from the movies? I know we will start downloading more and more as these songs win awards.
Right. Well, I've been listening to the La La Land soundtrack, and the one that's sort of catching attention is City of Stars from La La Land, and that's really good. But I actually preferred the song Audition, that, you know, the one that Emma Stone sings at the end of the movie. So I thought that would be the big, you know, award
worthy one. But I also like Can't Stop the Feeling from JT, from the Trolls film. I know that came out earlier in the year, but that was the one I voted for at the Critics' Choice Awards. It lost to La La Land, but I still am grooving to that song, you know, and Moana has some great songs from Lin-Manuel Miranda, who did Hamilton, and that's also a beautiful, beautiful movie from Disney this year. And again, on page with, like, Disney continuing to do really important movies that are speaking to the young generation in a way that their older classic films didn't, where it's not just about the princesses getting married to the prince at the end and being saved by a man, but just having more empowering, diverse, forward-thinking, and good themes.
Nice. Now, I saw the clip of you online talking about Fantastic Beasts and Where to Find Them. I am not saying that you don't always have unfailing energy, because you do. Your energy is high. But you know that your energy spikes a little bit in Harry Potter-related milieu.
Of course. Yeah, well, fantasy, after musicals, I'd say, like, fantasy is my favorite. And I love magic. I love witches. I think it all stems from The Wizard of Oz being my favorite film, which is both a musical and fantasy. And so, I'm a huge Harry Potter fan, and 2016 was a very big year for Harry Potter. We got the, you know, Harry Potter and the Cursed Child coming out on what was the play opening in the West End, and then that book being published, which was like the sequel. Then we get the prequel of Fantastic Beasts, that movie. And so it's just, it was so cool to be a Harry Potter fan last year and kind of looking forward to now the way that we're going to be getting things stateside.
Nice. Nice. Now, should we not want to go to the movies, should we want to stay home and watch some TV, what Wizard of Oz-related TV show should we be checking out?
My new obsession is Emerald City. It's a new NBC fantasy drama series that airs Fridays at 9, 8 Central, and it stars Vincent D'Onofrio as the Wizard of Oz, Audra Arjona as Dorothy. It's the first Hispanic Dorothy in the history of Oz-related productions, and it's also the first network series TV program adaptation of The Wizard of Oz. And I love that it really covers L. Frank Baum's book series. L. Frank Baum wrote The Wizard of Oz, published in 1900. There were 13 sequels to it. And this TV series focuses, like, in 10 episodes on the first, like, three books. And it's really cool to see those characters come to life in a very kind of Game of Thrones type way. So did you catch the pilot on Friday night?
I have not watched it yet, so I should watch this straight away, I assume.
Yeah, I mean, if you like fantasy, if you like magic and you know, witchcraft, I think you'll enjoy it. It's certainly, I think it's smart for new Oz productions to not go the bright, musical, colorful route, because it really avoids the direct comparison then to Judy Garland and the film. And I mean, we'll still think of that as a great fan base, and that film is so iconic, you can't not think about it. But to do something so different and stand out on your own, I think, is a feat in of itself. And I really like the direction that Emerald City is going. And I interviewed the cast recently, and they were so excited to be participating in the world of Oz. And this show, if you stick with it, I've seen all 10 episodes already, because NBC sent me in advance for my interviews as research the season one, and I just loved it. I think it's a really great series.
We should be closer friends.
I agree.
I want to watch all 10 episodes. It's wonderful. Now, that's an interesting piece about interviewing the cast, right? So you do these interviews, and you have these casts who are doing junkets where they're doing interview after interview after interview. Mm-hmm. How do you set out to keep things lively for them? I mean, certainly the actors are always trying to stay upbeat and stay lively, but we also know they're doing just hundreds of interviews in a row. How do you set yourself apart to keep things interesting?
That's a challenge. And I'm very thankful that early on in my career, when I started as a producer and I was at Showtime, I had a great mentor there who really helped me before I started going to junkets in crafting my questions. And I'd write them and she'd go over them and give me tips, because she had been doing junkets for many years. And, you know, I think that the goals are to not ask yes or no questions. You want to ask open-ended questions that will inspire the stars to have more to say than one-word answers. You also want to really try to ask them something creative that maybe no one else has asked. The trick of that is sometimes when a celebrity says to you, oh, that's a really good question, that's their code for, oh, God, I've heard this question a million times. You're the most boring person I've ever met in my life, and I'm going to patronize you right now. So you never know if they're being genuine or not. But certainly with The Wizard of Oz, I have a leg up, I think, as a Wizard of Oz historian and in entertaining the stars that I meet and getting to ask them some really Ozzy questions. But otherwise, it's a challenge. And I'm so starstruck. I love what I do. It's getting to meet celebrities is part of what inspired me to go in this line of work to begin with. I don't take it for granted, and I really enjoy it. So sometimes I get a little intimidated and nervous and just overcome that and try to ask them questions that will open them up. I have had the experience with like Renee Zellweger where three questions in a row, she just passed and wouldn't answer anything I asked. And I wanted to start crying. It's a challenge, but you just got to, you know, be thankful for the opportunity and go for it.
I don't even know what to say about the Renee Zellweger thing. You just kind of want to say, well, you know that you have to do this interview right now, right? Like, I don't even know how to push through that.
Or what I wanted to say at the time, because it was like 2003, Down With Love. I was a producer at Showtime. In the same day, I interviewed Sarah Paulson, David Hyde Pierce, Ewan McGregor, who were all so kind. I get to Renee Zellweger, and literally in like the 5 minutes I have with her, 3 minutes in where she won't speak to me, and I'm beginning to think like, you know, if you don't answer one of these questions, I'm going to lose my job, you know? So it's like, please throw me a bone here. And I finally reduced myself to asking her a generic genre question about romantic comedies, and she lit up and spoke very generically about that. She was just in a bad mood that day. I've heard lovely things about her, but she wasn't playing ball with me.
All right, we'll take it. Now back to Emerald City. I will tell you, I did not very much enjoy Tin Man on the Sci-Fi Channel, so this is going to be better than that?
You know, I'll say, I can't say it's better than, because I liked them equally. I'm very much an equal Oz opportunist, and I love it all. So I can't judge whether one is better than the other, but what I'll tell you is it is different. It's less hardcore science fiction. It goes more towards fantasy. There's a little bit more romance throughout the season. There's a little bit more intrigue and drama in terms of the characters and the mix there. And so it might pique your interest more than Tin Man did, just from a genre standpoint and how it skews in the writing and storytelling.
Okay. Any gay storylines there in Emerald City?
Well, there's not per se a gay storyline, but there is a transgender character. And what's so brilliant about it is, in 1904, the second Oz book that L. Frank Baum published was The Marvelous Land of Oz. And in that story, which is, you know, children's literature, he wrote a character, Tipitarius, called Tip, who is a boy throughout the entire book and is revealed at the end of the book to have been the Queen of Oz, Princess Ozma, enchanted and hidden as a boy. So when Tip becomes a girl and becomes the rightful ruler of Oz, Ozma, it was the first that I know of American transgender child in children's literature, and that you will see that transition. It actually was revealed in the pilot episode already, that transition in the character Tip. We don't know yet. I mean, I know, but you don't know yet, and I don't do spoilers, whether or not this Tip in Emerald City becomes Ozma throughout the season, but it's something to look for.
Okay. I'm going to check this out straight away. This is what I'm going to do on this cold day. What movies are coming out that you're excited for?
Well, this year, I'm so excited about Wonder Woman finally happening.
Yeah.
I mean, I think that's something we always wanted. You know, I just wish that Linda Carter was in it somehow for some cameo, but that would have been fun. I'm also looking forward to seeing Star Wars Episode 8 in December to see Carrie Fisher's, you know, last performance as Princess Leia. I think that's going to be great. And then also, of course, Beauty and the Beast. I mean, there's our musical this year
there
and
is.
Our fairy tale all in one. And we've got Harry Potter's Emma Watson in the lead role. So I think that's going to be wonderful.
Okay. Now, my assumption is that Ryan Jay throws a pretty darn good Oscars party. Is that true?
No. Actually, I wish. That's like my biggest challenge every year. All I want to do is hang out with friends and enjoy. But because I cover the Oscars the following day, I do a huge national tour on radio stations for like 4 hours, starting at like 5 a.m. So I get no sleep after watching the Oscars. So I'm prepping for a couple hours. I do a 3-hour radio tour. Then I go and do live TV spots throughout the day, a couple later radio stations. It's like exhausting. I'm not fun to watch the Oscars with because I'm like quiet. Like if people are talking during someone's acceptance speech, I'm like the devil. So I'm not fun to watch with. I have to listen to every word. I'm analyzing because I'm reviewing the show. I'm also reviewing the fashion. But secretly, I mean, after, you know, several years of doing this, I really just want to lay back and watch it with my friends like I do with the Golden Globes or something else because there's a little less pressure there.
Okay. Give me one given. Now, the nominations are not yet out for the Oscars, but give me one given of we know this person will win for this award. Just one.
Viola Davis for Fences, supporting actress.
Yeah.
And then probably Best Picture, La La Land. I mean, it's really, you know, that's really the one to beat right now.
Can we also just acknowledge that maybe my high school teacher in drama shouldn't have let me do scenes from Fences? It really was culturally inappropriate. I still would like to talk about that.
Are you serious?
Oh, yeah. Yeah. A bunch of white kids in northern New Jersey doing scenes from Fences. I know every word to Fences, and I'm happy that I do, but maybe not for the reason of actually doing scenes from there. Really,
that is hilarious.
A little bit dissonant.
Well, I was in the almost all-white version of The Wiz at my high school, which I was all too happy to do just because they let me be the scarecrow. And, you know, to get to go to Oz myself was a thrill. But, yeah, you know, listen, bringing the culture of theater to high schools across America is a great experience. But you're right. There's something a little bit awkward about that casting.
So I will, of course, be doing scenes from Fences next weekend at the Happy Dog here in Cleveland if anyone wants to see. I'm not, but I should.
You should set up your camera and do some YouTube scenes for us.
This is why I do radio. Listeners, this is what I need you guys to go do. Stroll on over to ryanjreviews.com. That's ryanjayreviews.com. And you can learn all about the great things that Ryan is doing. Ryan, you bring an energy to this that I just enjoy. It's always clear when I see you doing these reviews that you enjoy what you do. And we don't see that in everybody out there. And it really gives me more enthusiasm. It gives all of your audiences more enthusiasm to go check out this art, because it is indeed art, and you paved the way for us. So thank you for what you're doing.
Thank you too, and thank you for what you're doing. I'm a big fan of yours as well, Ken, so I really appreciate it.
Come on, Annie. Let's go to the movies.
Let's go see the stars.
Cowboy heroes, cops and robbers, glamour and strife, bigger than life. Sitting in the darkness, what a world to see. Let's go to the movies, Annie, wait and see. Betty Davis is probably lying, and Greta Garbo is probably crying, while Robert Taylor is locked in her dying embrace. Chico and Groucho and Chaplin and Lloyd are all super. Sweet Mickey Mouse, Shirley Temple, and dear Jackie.
All right, folks, and we are back. Well, we still do indeed have time left on this week's episode, so let's get to all of the latest LGBTQ news that's out there. Judy Shepard, the mother of Matthew Shepard, who was just tragically murdered in 1998. I can't believe 1998, how long ago that was. I know exactly where I was in New York City when I heard about the murder of Matthew Shepard. We were roughly the same age at the time. Actually, he was 21 in 1998. I was also 21 in 1998. And just coming out at that point and being comfortable with who I was, so the news of his murder really messed me up a lot, messed up a lot of people in the country. And for a lot of us, and I've said this on the show before, Judy Shepard became our mother. You know, when many of us were struggling with our biological families, Judy Shepard became the mother to so many of us. And if you're ever looking for just an opportunity to hear me almost crying on the air, you can go to thisshowissogay.com and click on podcasts and go all the way back to our 100th episode. And Judy Shepard was our guest for that 100th episode. It was just such an honor and privilege to have her on. But Judy Shepard making the news this week. She has called for the Senate to reject Donald Trump's nominee for Attorney General, Jeff Sessions, who fought against a hate crime law named in honor of her son. The Matthew Shepard and James Byrd Jr. Hate Crimes Prevention Act was signed by President Obama in 2010, but it was fiercely opposed by Republican Senator Jeff Sessions, who Donald Trump has named as his attorney general. In a submission to members of Congress during Jeff Sessions' confirmation hearing, Judy Shepard urged senators to reject his appointment. She wrote this, quote, "We were fortunate to work alongside members of Congress, both Democrats and Republicans, who championed the Matthew Shepard and James Byrd Jr. Hate Crimes Prevention Act with the determination, compassion, and vision to match ours As the parents of a child targeted for simply wanting to be himself, Senator Jeff Sessions was not one of these members. In fact, Senator Sessions strongly opposed the hate crimes bill, characterizing hate crimes as mere thought crimes. Unfortunately, Senator Sessions believes that hate crimes are what he describes as mere thought crimes. My son was not killed by thoughts or because his murderers said hateful things. My son was brutally beaten with the butt of a .357 Magnum pistol. He was tied to a fence, and he was left to die in freezing temperatures because he was gay. Senator Sessions' repeated efforts to diminish the life-changing acts of violence covered by the Hate Crimes Prevention Act horrified me then as a parent who knows the true cost of hate, and it terrifies me today to see that this same person is now being nominated as the country's highest authority to represent justice and equal protection under the law for all Americans. As Attorney General, Senator Sessions would be responsible for not only enforcing the Hate Crimes Prevention Act, but a myriad of other civil rights laws, including the Violence Against Women Act, which includes explicit protections for LGBTQ people. Senator Sessions' very public record of hostility towards the LGBTQ community and federal legislation designed to protect vulnerable Americans, including the Voting Rights Act, makes it nearly impossible to believe that he will vigorously enforce statutes and ideas that he worked so hard to defeat. That is Judy Shepard, just such an inspiring change maker out there. This is not someone who said, yeah, I'm going to become an activist. No, it was a horrible set of circumstances that led to her being in the limelight. And she has never shied away from using the stage to urge us to be better, to protect all of our sons and daughters out there. So Judy Shepard's arguing against Senator Jeff Sessions being named as Attorney General. How about a little Madonna news? I don't feel like we do a ton of Madonna news on this show. Madonna's new film is set to bring LGBT rights to the forefront as it introduces much more needed gay characters to the world of film. Based on the novel The Impossible Lives of Greta Wells by Andrew Sean Greer, this new film by Madonna Loved will feature a gay character that Madonna hopes will champion the fight for gay rights. The film, which she is directing and co-writing, explores the character of Felix, who is the gay twin brother of the protagonist. Madonna said this, quote, "It touches on a lot of really important topics I've always been invested in or championed, fighting for women's rights, gay rights, civil rights, always fighting for the underdog." Madonna explained that her own experience with oppression fed into her decision to create the film. She said this, quote, "I've always felt oppressed. I know a lot of people would go, oh, that's ridiculous for you to say that. You're a successful, white, wealthy pop star. But I've had the, I can't say that word, but let's say crap, kicked out of me for my entire career. And a large part of that is because I'm female and also because I refuse to live a conventional life." So, got to keep our eyes open for a new film by Madonna called Loved. What a lovely title. Let's turn our attention to North Dakota. North Dakota lawmakers have rejected, you ready? North Dakota lawmakers have rejected a law to formalize same-sex marriage more than a year after the Supreme Court brought about marriage equality in the United States. Just to remind you, in June 2015, so this is quite a bit ago, in June 2015, a Supreme Court ruling brought same-sex marriage to all 50 states when they ruled that banning gay couples from getting married is unconstitutional. We all know that, right? We all know that news. Not so in North Dakota. More than a year on from the ruling, lawmakers in North Dakota are still signaling their opposition to the law. Democrats had tabled the measure to formalize equal marriage in the state's laws, removing defunct claims that marriage is between one man and one woman, and rephrasing dozens of state laws to be compliant with the Supreme Court ruling. The bill had cleared the Senate Judiciary Committee, but it was defeated. It was defeated by Republicans in the Senate, falling by a vote of 15 to 31, Republican Jan Myrdal claimed that the bill, quote, "would serve to diminish with official intent the honor and sacredness of what the human institution of marriage is described as in the North Dakota Constitution as it stands today." So yes, she is saying we need to keep this enshrined in the North Dakota Constitution, even though it is now not the law of the land. I understand federalism. This is actually not how it works, folks. States' rights in certain areas can be a great thing. Not so when the Supreme Court has said, sorry guys, it's actually the law of the land. North Dakota, you are part of the land. You can't just say, I'm sorry, we will not do that here. And indeed, Democratic Senator John Grabinger agreed, saying this, quote, North Dakota simply cannot overrule the U.S. Supreme Court's decision. I do not believe it is responsible for us to risk potentially millions of dollars in taxpayer money just because we refuse to update the current century code to reflect current federal law. This bill would have no effect beyond formalizing equal marriage in the law. So again, it doesn't even have an effect, right? It doesn't mean, I don't want you to hear the story and think, well, wait, there's no marriage equality in North Dakota. There is. There is marriage equality in North Dakota, without question. This really is an attempt by certain individuals, and it looks from this story as if they are Republicans. This is an attempt by Republicans to just give the middle finger. That's really all it is. It's just saying, yes, it's the law, but we want to at least be able to say that we disagree with it. It's just so petty, and I would like to again remind you what a colossal waste of time. This was a waste of time. There are issues that my brothers and sisters in North Dakota, that your legislators will not get to, because this is what they are wasting their time on. Your update from North Dakota. Some news out of Cuba. This is a fun one. Former RuPaul's Drag Race contestant Mimi I'm First, who I love, Mimi I'm First has become the first American drag queen to perform in Cuba. Very exciting. This is as relations develop between the two countries. A strict trade embargo of Cuba spanning more than 50 years has generally prevented U.S. artists from performing in Havana, but President Obama relaxed the measures in 2015 for the first time. Taking advantage of the friendlier relations, drag queen Mimi I'm First became the first to perform a show in the country. She performed on New Year's with help from local LGBT groups. The culture gap was apparent from the start, apparently, with the local dancers taking part in the show having never heard Madonna's Express Yourself before. Oh my gosh. However, the performers overcame the cultural and language gap for a groundbreaking performance, quote, in hopes that it will inspire American and Cuban relations to continue to improve. Mimi I'm First said this, quote, the moment was overwhelming. The idea that we can come together to create a piece of art, to come together to express ourselves and encourage others to think about the possibilities that lay before us when we try to bridge the divides that stand between us. My trip to Cuba was life-changing. I got to experience the rich history and culture of Cuba by living in their houses and spending the week disconnecting from the outside world. More importantly, the Cuban people are incredible. They have fought through a strict embargo and have thrived with nothing more than the tenacity of the human spirit. That is inspiring for us all. And at the end of the day, that is what will always win. There you go. Mimi I'm First performing in Cuba. I love that. I love that. Republican preacher, a Republican who ran to become Virginia's lieutenant governor, has claimed that the response to Pastor Kim Burrell's homophobic rant proves that liberals hate black churches. Huh. So as we covered on last week's show, singer Kim Burrell, who said some really homophobic things, she has every right to say all the homophobic things that she wants to say. And indeed, she said all of these homophobic things, and it was on Facebook Live, and it was on YouTube, just as Ellen DeGeneres, on whose show Kim Burrell was scheduled to appear with Pharrell Williams, Ellen DeGeneres also has the right to say, no, thank you, I'm actually not going to have you on my show. Well, because Ellen DeGeneres made that decision, E.W. Jackson, who was the Republican Party nominee for Lieutenant Governor of Virginia in the 2013 election, he made some pretty extraordinary claims. Huh. He said this, Kim Burrell is being persecuted for what she said in church. If you are a Christian and you happen to be black, these Democrats and liberals hate your guts. If you are a Bible-believing Christian, if you're a wishy-washy, don't half believe anything and aren't willing to stand up for anything, you'll be okay with them. But if you're a Bible-believing Christian who is on fire for God and you believe that his word is true, they hate your guts. Don't let anybody kid you. But he did not stop there. He had more to say about Ellen DeGeneres. He said this, quote, why would any Christian want to sit up and watch any woman who I guess thinks she's a man? The whole thing is confusion. I guess Ellen DeGeneres would say she's a woman, but she likes other women, but she's not a man. To me, folks, it's just confusion. Look, here's the reality. If a woman is a lesbian and likes women, say masculine type women, why wouldn't you just like a man? To me, the whole thing is just confusion, and the Bible says it's confusion. By the way, I just want to remind all of you, lesbianism, not mentioned in the Bible. But apparently, to this gentleman, to this pastor, who, by the way, this isn't just some random pastor. This was the Republican nominee for Virginia's lieutenant governor just a few years ago. This is what he had to say. Now, we get people writing in all the time who say, why do you cover this stuff? Because it's important that we know that folks are saying things like this. We like shining a light on them because when we shine the light on this type of bigotry, it causes it, just like a shadow, to go away. That's what it does. Really important stuff. And finally, we love this story. A 91-year-old veteran will finally receive an honorable discharge more than 70 years after he was booted out of the Air Force in a homophobic witch hunt. Hubert Edward Spires had signed up to the Air Force at age 20, and he served from 1946 to 1948. He earned the rank of sergeant. However, he was dismissed for undesirable habits and traits of character as part of a homophobic witch hunt. Unbelievable. Unbelievable stuff. Well, now, all of these years later, the Air Force Board for Correction of Military Records has confirmed that the request for an honorable discharge has now been approved by the Air Force Review Board's agency. Spires, who is unfortunately in poor health, will be afforded a military burial thanks to his new discharge status. There are wrongs that can be corrected, folks. We can't just pretend that these things didn't happen. These things did happen. They are a part of our history. But we can still address the wrongs that have happened. And if you didn't see the story too, Secretary of State Kerry, he also has issued apologies out there for all the wrongs done by the State Department over the years that have really persecuted members of the LGBTQ community. We have to confront our past. We can't just sweep it under the carpet. These things happened. Lives were not just affected. Lives were destroyed. And we have to acknowledge that and make amends anywhere we can. So there you go, folks. Change, change, change. It is a good thing. Our huge, huge thanks to Margaret Cho. How about that part where Margaret Cho was on the show? You have to go strolling over, find out all the great things she's doing, margaretcho.com. And of course, Ryan J., who I love having on this show, not just for his snappy dressing, which you can't see on the air, but trust me, he's a snappy dresser, but also because he gives us even more passion for the movies and all things Wizard of Oz. Strolling over to RyanJReviews.com. And of course, you guys get out there and go make a difference, whether you are doing some stand-up comedy or you're reviewing movies or you are hosting your own radio show, whatever it might be, go use your voice to make a difference for your LGBTQ brothers and sisters, for all of our allies out there. And while you're out there using your voice, while you're out there making a difference, please remember, why be gay when you can be so gay?
Sitting in the darkness, popcorn on your knees.